Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of the Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Hey, what's the matter with you anyway? Don't you even know a rabbit when you see one? It's true, Doc. I'm a rabbit, all right. Would you like to shoot me now or wait till you get home? Shoot him now! Shoot him now! You keep out of this. He doesn't have to shoot you now. He does so have to shoot me now. I demand that you shoot me now. Let's run through that again. Okay. Would you like to shoot me now or wait till you get home? Shoot him now. Shoot him now. You keep out of this. He doesn't have to shoot you now. Ha! That's it! Hold it right there! Pronoun trouble. It's not he doesn't have to shoot you now. It's he doesn't have to shoot me now. Well, I say he does have to shoot me now! So shoot me now! Yes. Oh, no, you don't. Not again. Sorry. This time we'll try it from the other end. Look, you're a hunter, right?
Right.
And this is rabbit season, right?
Right.
And if he was a rabbit, what would you do? Yeah, you're so smart. If I was a rabbit, what would you do?
Well, I'd...
Not again. Very funny.
Hello, it is 29 minutes after the hour of 1, and this is the month of April in the year of our Lord, 2011. Thank you for joining us on this Wednesday that ye might be amused and informed and a better all-around person. It is Wednesday, and welcome to day 12. We are here live from high above the Milkpacking District in the glorious and plushly appointed and, I would say slightly better than average studios of the Emerson News Network. I mean, really, all things considered, I've worked in a lot of studios in my life. I've been here, I've been there, I've been everywhere. I've been up, I've been down, I've been all around. I've been high, I've been low, I've been all the places in between. And I would say that this studio is plushly appointed. It isn't overly ostentatious, it is cozy, and it sounds fantastic. Even if, as was just the case, there was occasionally a truck outside, I almost thought about cracking the microphone just to sort of capture the sound of what was happening right as we started the show.
Was that a truck or was that a train?
I think it was... Now, see, I think it was a truck. I think it was one of the Dairy Gold trucks, but I could be wrong about that. Because it looked like there was a truck. Here's what it was. So just now, as we wrapped up Legion of News, and there was a sort of in-between time, we were doing the little musical interlude. As we were getting ready to do this show, there was this horn blaring outside, and it sounded very much like a truck. And I cracked the window. I didn't see a train sort of stopped anywhere. Because I don't think a train It sounded like a train honking to get a car off the track, but I looked out and I didn't see any train stopped. I did see a Derrigold truck that was trying to get across the street, and it looked like it was being thwarted by some sort of vehicle. I don't think a train really honks at you because I don't think a train is capable of stopping. I think the only time a train honks at you is if it's already stopped and it's trying to start again and you're just blocking its way.
Well, they do blow their horn before they come through some intersection area.
But it was for a long time. Like, it was over there like 60 seconds or so. Yeah. And it sounded like... So I think if a train has to honk at you for 60 seconds to get out of the way, the train is by definition not moving. Because that's a problem that resolves itself, I think, pretty quickly. Anyway, I'm just saying... This is a studio from which the warm yet crisp timbres of our voices can be heard, I would say, with a great amount of clarity and efficiency, and we're glad to be here. It is 503-505-6964. You'd like to be part of the program today. You should speak with us. It's 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like it. It's rick at rickemerson.com. That is rick at rickemerson.com. Don Taylor can be emailed. It's don at rickemerson.com. You can hit us up via the text box or at Skype if you like. That is Rick Emerson Show. It's all one word via Skype. Rick Emerson Show. Coming up later on the night, we got your Penis Watch, Corpse Watch on the way. Anna Griffin from the Oregonian, author of a thrice-weekly column about life in this city and in Multnomah County, be joining us in the studio. So starting today, she's going to be alternating Wednesdays, with Mr. Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week. So today's the first day that she will be moving up from Thursday to Wednesday. So she'll be in about a half hour from now. Also, I don't know, like 3 o'clock or thereabouts, we're going to be speaking with David Walker, yes?
Yes, yes,
okay.
Indeed.
So, and he's at his chiropractor's office, is that the deal?
Yeah, I had asked him if he could call us about 1:45. He has a book signing this evening with Mr. Mike Russell. And I asked him if he could call at 1:45, and he said that he had a chiropractor's appointment that began at 1:45.
He didn't really strike me as a chiropractic kind of guy.
No, I was kind of surprised by that.
He seems like a guy that would sort of, that he would turn his nose up at things such as that, or like acupuncture, acupressure, or anything.
Yeah, we will have to ask him about this when he calls us.
All right, so David Walker is going to be at his chiropractor this afternoon, but we'll talk to him at 3 o'clock. Don Taylor is working on the following headlines, I would imagine, for your Wednesday.
Well,
am I interrupting a thing?
Yeah, I've got about 14 things going simultaneously.
Is one of them our radio program?
Yes, excellent. Yes, indeed. A murderer is convicted who had sex with a corpse. I got a woman who was arrested in connection with a robbery at a hair supply store. And authorities in New York talking about human remains that have been found hither and yon over the last few months.
Higgledy-piggledy?
Yes.
Helter-skelter?
Exactly.
Rat-a-tat-tat?
Yes.
All right.
By the way, really quickly, I wanted to share with you, since this kind of is semi-connected to the Bugs Bunny Daffy Duck moment that we had at the top of the show, I just have to open this up. I got an email directed at me from one of our fine listeners. Which I will read to you as soon as my computer actually pulls it up.
We'll be joined by the contents of Don's email in just a moment. You're listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Please stand by. Any second now, Don will be reading an email to us. It'll be worth the wait.
This moment brought to you by Microsoft. Okay, here we go. This
Any is... second now. All right, are we ready?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah, no. Wait.
I swear to Christ, we'll have some actual content for your 32 cents in just a moment.
All right, our listener, Michael in Seaside, writes, Don, pleased to be asking the wordsmith general, and I believe by that he means you.
That's a word Nazi.
Why he didn't cut Ryan White off at the knees when telling of his wife, taking out the frozen baby food and unthawing it to feed the baby.
Okay, give me credit, by the way, for because I don't think I got CC'd in that email. Give me credit, by the way, for before you even said it, knowing what he was referring to. Yeah, I didn't point out unthaw because it would have started a whole thing. Here's the thing about not correcting unthaw. Also, I didn't correct Joe Squires when he said nuclear. The thing about Ryan White saying unthaw, which I did notice and did actually retain, I made a conscious decision not to mention that because I know my own weaknesses and I know how my own brain operates, and I would have gotten so totally off the path by talking about Utah because that is the thing that I associate almost exclusively with living in Utah. People in Utah are constantly unthawing things. My wife every now and again will slip into that. Doesn't happen very often, like once a year or so. She'll talk about taking something out. She'll go, well, I'm just going to go home and unthaw me some dinner. She won't quite say it like that, but she'll use the word unthaw, and I just sort of arch an eyebrow at her, and she understands what I'm talking about. Unthaw is right up there with bathing the dog, which is a thing that people in Utah will do. They're going to go to the verb of bathe does not exist in Utah for most people. It is, in fact, just bath. As in, I'm going to go bath my kid, and then I can meet you for bowling later on the night. And the thing is, none of them, they don't notice anything. They don't register anything wrong or incorrect about it, because you'll actually, it's not like a thing.
Wow.
The thing about nuclear, I mean, it bugs me too, but it's like, but at least that's the thing where they know what the word is, but it just gets transposed on the way out of their mouth. In Utah, the thing about like unthaw or bathing the dog, that is the thing that is just an accepted figure of speech or an accepted pronunciation. Apparently there's nothing wrong with it if you live within inside the confines of that five states. So anyway, but that's why I did not mention unthaw, because he was trying to tell some larger story, and if I'd interviewed with like, can I just, it would have been some oral footnote that would have gotten us so totally off track that we might not have returned to it. So that is why.
All right.
Dick. All right, there you go. So on the... by the way, speaking of just... Well, while we're getting off path a little bit, if you want to read something amusing, and I know you do, you can go to rickemerson.com. I think I read this on the air yesterday, but if you have not seen it yet, I post it up at rickemerson.com or at facebook.com/rickemerson. The contents of that email from the guy who found that his, like, 85-year-old mother or whatever was...
Yes.
And that Rick Emerson, so amusing, so handsome, or whatever it is that she said. So I am...
And he should have encouraged her, by the way, to write to the fine folks of KPAM to let them know.
Seriously.
Kind of counterbalance all of the, what the hell?
What's wrong with my radio this morning? So you can see that at rickemerson.com. So Penis Watch coming up today, Corpse Watch coming up today. Anna Griffin from the Oregonian going to be in the studio with us. And around 3 o'clock or so, we'll talk to Mr. David Walker, who's going to be doing a signing tonight at Bridgetown Comics. Yes?
Yes.
And that is with...
Bridge City Comics.
Stumptown Comics. I can never get it straight. Bridge City Comics. And he's going to be there with Mr. Mike Russell. So David Walker, of course, has got Darius Logan Super Justice Force. That is his... does it exist in physical form? He must. If he's doing a signing, it must be out in like an actual bound edition, because it was first put out as an e-book, electronic,
right,
which is where I'm reading it. And so I've been reading it like 5 chapters at a time, and it's very good, by the way. I strongly recommend that you go to DariusLogan.com and read that. It is Darius Logan Super Justice Force.
It may be print on demand, I'm not sure, but I'm assuming he will have physical copies for you to purchase. And he will sign for you.
And then Mike Russell has a couple of different things. One of them was with Court and Fatboy and his thing where they're excavating unicorns from underneath the Pentagon or something.
Right. And then the other is he's put together little books of this this cartoon he did over the last few months called Tales of the Sabretooth Vampire, which is about this little short vampire who has super extra long saber teeth, which means he's just kind of stuck on the ground and can't go anywhere.
That's adorable.
Yes.
Sort of a an anthropomorphized Benicula.
Yes, a little bit.
Okay, then. All right. Did you read Benicula?
I did.
Excellent. Good for you. I made a Benicula reference the other day, and somebody said they didn't know what I was talking about. And it was somebody my age. And so I would imagine that just goes without saying that you understand your Benicula, your Howliday Inn. All right. Does anybody know can you name the third book in the Benicula series?
No.
The Celery Stalks at Midnight.
That's right.
There you go. Bam. 32 cents in a nutshell. Microcosm down like that. It is 503-505-6964. You can also email it to rick@rickemerson.com or don@rickemerson.com or Rick Emerson Show via Skype. So all that is on the way, plus other tales of amusement and comedy and apparently of sleeplessness and insomnia and the whatnot. Is this because of your Russian neighbors or is that just like a bonus?
That's just a bonus. I have this thing going on where... I go through these periods where I just have trouble sleeping, and part of it is because ever since Patrick had his parts removed. By the way, update on Patrick, we now are not going to have parts of his kidney taken out because...
So the test has not been delayed, it's been canceled.
Right,
okay.
Because he put off that test and then he went to see his regular doctor and has had like lab tests run in the meantime, blood tests. And she says, apparently his kidney is fantastic. His kidney function is awesome.
Does it unnerve you that different doctors are coming up with the same...
His liver function is fantastic, which is the OHSU woman was like, well, we just want to dig in there and cut out a big hunk of your liver because she's a transplant.
But does it bother you that different doctors are coming up with different reads on the same organ?
Oh, yes. It's like living through an episode of House.
It seems like then you would want to get the part of the liver taken or taken and looked at. If somebody goes, you're doomed, and somebody goes, you're fine.
Yeah, except that apparently now, according to his regular real doctor that we have finally settled in with, because part of this whole nonsense was he didn't have a primary physician, and he had an appointment to see a woman, and then 2 days before he was going to have his first appointment with her, he ended up in the hospital. So we've been going through all of this without him having, like, a single primary care physician to go to. It's all been people parting him out, you know?
They've been temps.
Yeah, it's like we've been
whoever's
going to the transmission guy and to the brake specialist and, you know, to the tire place, but we don't have, like, one mechanic. So he's been going to his mechanic, and apparently his the liver, which we were worried about. Liver apparently is awesome. It's some kidney problem. So now we're working on his kidneys. But anyway, ever since he started having, like, had his parts taken out, he's had restless leg syndrome. And he just kicks and twitches, like, all night. And so when I already have trouble getting to sleep, I'm laying there and I'm, like, trying, and I'll start it. But when somebody every 15 seconds just kicks for no reason, it's like, then you go, okay, now I'm going to fall asleep. I'm falling asleep. Or kick. I'm falling asleep. And so, yeah, and it drives me crazy. And a couple of times I've actually just woken him up and said, go to the couch. I hate you. So last night I woke up and I wasn't going to kick him out on the couch. I just got up and went out in the living room myself. I was up till like 3 o'clock in the morning, finally went back to bed, and I get into bed and I have these neighbors, these Russian guys. And we have this rule at the apartment complex. There's this law that you can't, on your balcony, you can barbecue, but it has to be like a propane barbecue. You can't use charcoal barbecues on the balconies. Because I guess it would kick over and then charcoals could go everywhere.
So it's not because of the smell, it's a fire hazard.
Yeah, I think
thing.
It's a fire hazard.
All right.
So what they do is they have a charcoal barbecue, but they haul it out onto like this walkway, like communal lawn area, and cook steaks at like 1 o'clock in the morning and talk to each other in Russian. And it's right up this little hill from where my bedroom window is. So at like 3 a.m., or I tried to go back to sleep last night, and I go in and I open the window because I want some fresh air, and I think I'll finally be able to get to sleep. And I sort of got 3 a.m. There's Russian guys out there, and they're cooking. I don't know what they were cooking, but it was wrapped in bacon. Because I'm laying there trying to fall asleep. Patrick's twitching. My bedroom is filling with the smell of delicious cooked bacon wrapped around something meaty. And I'm just laying there hearing these guys. And I can't understand what they're saying because they're talking in Russian.
Ho, ho, borshche truska.
Yes. I know nothing about these people other than the men go out in the middle of the night and cook meat. And the woman, there's an older woman who has a tiny dog. I think they're Shelties, the ones that look like miniature collies.
Yes.
And it's a horrible dog, a horrible, nasty dog. And I had Bella out once, and part of it is my fault. Bella was not on the leash at the moment. And Bella went over and said, hey, dog, be my friend. And the horrible little Sheltie just started going at her. So now that Russian woman just gives me the stink eye every time I see her. So I'm sure she's put a curse on me.
You're
going to
be removed at some point. You're going to be disappeared.
So at 3 a.m.
What is it that was keeping you awake? Was it the smell of the bacon?
It was everything. It was my brain. Well, then I started getting twitchy leg. So I think I caught it from Patrick.
Can't you just, as 9,000 people have already said, didn't we just on this very program, like 4 days ago, discuss the cure for restless leg syndrome, which is just...
Let's like put a potato under your pillow or something. What was it?
Well, if that's what you call it at your house.
Oh, the sexing.
The sexing.
Yeah.
I mean, it really doesn't even require your own body. It doesn't require you to really move much at all, except for maybe your hand.
Well, yeah, 3 o'clock in the morning.
Patrick would be better off. That's a win-win. You get some sleep, he gets, you know.
But I'm laying there at 3 a.m. and I'm grouchy and Patrick's twitching and I'm smelling bacon and listening to Russian guys talk. I'm not exactly feeling sexy.
Well, at least, look, sometimes you do things for yourself. Sometimes you do things for other people. Sometimes it's not all about Dawn. Sometimes you got to give a little to get, Dawn. Sometimes it's about what is right for the situation.
Yeah, so I fell asleep sometime after 3 and then I woke up again at 5 and was awake. And at that point, though, I guess the Russian guys, with their bellies full of delicious bacon-covered meat, they were asleep. Maybe that's why they do it in the middle of the night. They're cooking Christian babies.
Ho, ho, ho! Does Patrick know that he has restless leg syndrome?
Yeah, but he's asleep, so what does he care?
I guess it doesn't really bother him.
He doesn't know what's happening.
So like a thing like he's just doing the Tour de France, but he's in bed right next to you?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like...
I don't really know what that's like. I've only ever heard about it.
It's like when your dog is dreaming. And you think, like, oh, it's cute. He's chasing rabbits. It's kind of like that. Like, he's laying there, and then just all of a sudden, his leg will just go kick. And just the bed will jar, just a little bit. And then, like, I'll sit there and count down, and it happens about every 15 seconds. just long enough for me to like start to kind of relax and then have it happen again.
I hate to just be like a dog with a bone here, so to speak, but I...
So you're thinking I should maybe take care of him?
Well, as somebody... but see, here's the thing. See, this is your problem, you women, and especially you, Dawn, is that you're viewing it as taking care of him. It sounds to me like it would have been taking care of both of you.
Oh, you're right.
I think we've discovered the problem with male-female relations is that you're viewing the sexing as, quote, taking care of him.
Well, in this case, if I'm doing it just so that, you know, he won't kick during the night and I can sleep.
But isn't that really what sex is most of the time? Just give in to guys so they won't kick or whine or pout or mope or so they'll keep, I don't know, paying the bills or whatever it is. I mean, it's like that's right. That's as somebody just says, here's a thing that happened. Here's a new meme. I don't know if it's a meme, but here's a thing that the internet has given us. It's the am I right spelled as just all one word, AMIRITE. That never fails to amuse me. And so Jesus in the OC says, Don, sometimes you got to burn the village to win the war. Am I right? And we have this, daddy gots to get his medicine. Also, Don, stop complaining and start humping, for the love of God. I mean, just, you know, it just seems like if the cure is right there. And look, and that's a holistic cure. It's an all-over remedy. It's natural. There's no, you know, there's no artificial chemicals required for that. I'm just saying that does seem like a cure for everything because you're going to get a little sleep. He's not going to be twitching around and be a spastic freak. So I just don't understand. And I mean, plus, he's a guy. How long could it possibly take to administer said cure? Mm-hmm. I mean, really, what is it, you know, and listen, I mean, maybe Patrick's a marathon man and I just don't know it. But I mean, it seems like men can get the job done quickly if they need to.
Patrick is proud of his endurance, let me tell you.
But I'm saying it's like, I think guys, like if they're in a pinch. You know, it's like, sometimes you need to take the full kit out for deep sea fishing. Sometimes it's just the pocketbit fisherman from the shore.
Go ahead, honey. Close your eyes. Think of anybody else other than me. I give you permission. Just let's make this quick.
I'm just saying. Somebody wants you to, Dawn, my leg is going crazy. I'm at 39th and Powell. Please get here now.
Well, I'll tell you what. Tonight, I will attempt this experiment. I'll see what I can do.
Now it's just, I have to quit reading these at some point because it's just going to be an endless chain. Now it's just going to be like the New York like stock ticker thing, but it's just Dawn comments. It says, I love how she can't even be bothered to hump, all caps, the man she married. Wow.
Oh, come on. That is obviously from somebody who is not married. I've been married for 12 years. Do you know how often you actually have sex when you've been married for 12 years?
I'm just reading these off.
I'm not saying that I don't enjoy it. I like it very much. But it's like, you know, there's a point after you've been together for a while where it's kind of like, well, we could set aside a little time to have sex. Or, ooh, Fringe is on. You know, it's...
Okay. No. Step back, guys. She's all Patrick's. It is 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. Three people just simultaneously typed, Jesus Christ. That's awesome. Jesus Christ, this is, I'm getting married yesterday. Sign me up. Oh, good times. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program, Penis Watch coming up, Corpse Watch, Anna Griffin from the Oregonian, and later on, Mr. David Walker will be joining us via the telephone to talk about the book signing happening at Bridge City Comics tonight with him and Mr. Mike Russell. Again, you can find out more about David's book by going to DariusLogan.com. It's funny, I never call him David, actually. I think that's the first time I always just call him David Walker.
Yeah,
even
I think
when he's in
everyone
the room.
Does.
I don't ever call him. Yeah, I never just call him. But now it feels strangely weird. I feel like I'm his mom or something. Because even when he's in the room, I was like, so, David Walker, tell me all about blah, 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 blah.
And pretty much everybody I know, it seems like, who knows him, when you refer to him and he's not there.
It's Walker.
You either refer to him as David Walker or Walker.
I just realized that now. I never call him Walker. All right, then. Well, there you go. And this is all true. All right, here's a
and now,
Dawn Taylor
from the news desk. This is
by the
Dawn
way,
Taylor.
Actually, and before we even do anything else, I had some stuff of my own to bring up, but I don't even know if I should do it now. I should probably wait. I'll wait, and we'll do it when Anna Griffin gets here, because otherwise we're just going to get so totally off point. Here is Dawn Taylor, kids.
Police have arrested a woman in connection with a robbery at a South Nashville beauty supply store in which one of the suspects stun-gunned an employee. Oh, I guess this would actually be a taser watch. I didn't realize there was a stun gun involved. We'll just continue.
A fun gun,
as I like to call them.
You're just having your own little thing over there today. It's like a show inside a thing.
First of all, tired. Second of all, you know what it's like sometimes when you're you first crack open the Vizo?
Yes.
And you get all of the citrusy stuff in your mouth and your
you're all puckered up.
Yeah, you're puckered up and then your mouth just starts making extra saliva.
Yes, to try to get rid of the because they get the tartness going on. Several people are asking if Patrick is aware of the cure for restless leg syndrome and if he would be better off, if it would benefit him to know that such a cure is available to him morning, noon, and night.
It might very well. I'll have to. I'm sure he'll be delighted to know that we were talking about this on the radio. Him twitching in his sleep, keeping me awake, and that everyone recommending that humping is the prescribed treatment for this.
Well, I think that he would be curious to know, and I think probably happy to know that he carries the cure with him all the time. It's like making your own anti-venom.
That's true. It's like it's as if you just had like a little vial of penicillin with you all times.
It's sort of like a fleshy EpiPen.
Only in reverse.
That's exactly. Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us today.
Welcome to our new subscribers.
Unbelievably, later on, we've only just begun to defile the airwaves because later on today, I swear to Christ, we're going to talk about. Sometimes people go, hey, we're going to talk about your mom. We really honestly are going to talk about my mom. I don't have time to get to it now. It's this whole thing about my mom and Vegas and whatever. But I'm trying to stay at least somewhat on schedule today. Normally, it doesn't really matter, but A, I think Greg and Sarah are coming in this afternoon, because they didn't take this morning, did they?
No.
And also, we got Anna Griffin coming in at 2, and then...
But I'm out of here at 3:30, because I got...
David Walker at 3, and then you got to be gone by, like, 3:30. So it's a whole thing.
It's like a train. We gotta hit all the stations.
By the way, Cheryl would like you to know that she can never look Patrick in the eye again after today's conversation.
Sure.
So it's all been
and that's
ruined.
The thing is, like, now tonight we're going to go to that signing with David Walker and Mike. There's going to be all these people that are going to go, oh, this must be Patrick.
Exactly. All right.
Know what you'll be doing later. And he'll just be sitting there going, what? What are they talking about? I have no idea.
This is trending fast in an awkward direction. All right, here's Don Taylor. Let's take that story you just had. Uh-huh. Let's just move it a couple back. We'll just start with something else that's non-tasery.
Else?
We'll just get rolling start on
would
it.
Would you like to start with something penis-y?
I think we started with something penis-y.
Let's move on to something that's otherwise penis-y.
Is there something you just want to get out of the way before Anna Griffin's in the room with us? Is that the deal?
No. Okay, well, how about this? This is not weird in any way, nor is it a watch. Okay,
hey, look, it doesn't matter to me. I'm just saying, if you want to get right back to the penis right away, it seems like we just left that area of discussion. And it's like now you're steering back into it.
Well, we'll just put that aside as well. We will go to something that's sciencey because that's highbrow and that's high-minded.
All right.
A British toddler has become the first person in the world to be born with an extra strand in his DNA, a condition so rare.
Kill it. Kill it with fire.
Doctors don't even have a name for it.
What do you mean an extra strand of DNA, like not a double helix, but it's like a helix and a half?
He has a 7th chromosome, which has an extra arm. It has an extra strand on it.
Okay. That's icky.
Alfie Clamp.
Alfie Clamp.
From Warwickshire, Northern England.
Of the Brixton Clamps.
Was born blind and with severe disabilities.
Oh, now I feel bad for laughing at his name.
Oh, well. A series of tests revealed an extra strand of DNA, which has left the medical world baffled. His parents, Gemma and Richard, and doctors have no idea what his life expectancy will be or whether his condition will even improve.
It will be spent being prodded and poked, I imagine.
Pretty much, yes. Alfie
Clamp.
Has digestive problems, needs drugs to help his body absorb nutrients, and suffers fits sparked by high temperatures and metabolic problems.
So his life rules, basically.
I'm waiting, though, for him to be like the first X-Man.
But
that he throws one of these fits and he just lights somebody on fire with his mind.
It seems less... I mean, I don't mean to knock Alfie Clamp. It sounds like he's got enough problems right now. But it seems less interesting that he's got an extra strand of DNA... Since he seems fundamentally effed in every way. Like, it would be more interesting if he was just a normal guy, but had an extra strand of DNA.
That we don't know what this is going to mean later.
If you imagine reverse, like you give him an extra strand of DNA and then he comes out all messed up, which clearly happened, that is less that's less intriguing.
There's a picture of him, Alfie Clamp.
Well, he looks happy the way that many of those kids do.
Well, he just looks very British.
Yeah, he's sort of... But he's sort of retarded and snooty at the, you know.
Yeah. Like most British people.
Correcting you, but in a snooty accent that you can't understand.
I say. No, we don't call it the trunk. We call it the boot.
But then he does it while masturbating furiously and drooling.
I think he was headmaster. Anyway. It's fun to be mean to the British.
Ended up, to the British. That ended up being penis-y anyway. I'm sorry about
that. Exactly. Oh. Okay. Now what do you want to do?
You know, you've got the news over there, so.
Well, let's do the penis.
Let's get this over with.
Take
a look at my enormous penis. And my troubles start a-melting away. Take a look at my enormous penis. And everything is going my way.
Here's your penis watch for Wednesday.
In life, Paul Arison sought attention. In death, he's getting it. The 95-year-old Icelander's pickled penis will be the main attraction in one of his country's most bizarre museums. Sigurdur Hjartarson, who runs the Phallological Museum in the tiny Icelandic fishing town of Husavik, said Arison's organ will help round out the unusual institution's extensive collection of phalluses from whales, seals, bears, and other mammals. Several people had pledged their penis...
What do you mean? No. When you say whales...
They have a whale penis.
Oh, not from not of Welshmen.
No.
Okay, well, you said penis is from Wales.
Oh, I can see where your confusion might lie.
Okay, yes. I just, you know.
No, whales. Okay. Whales.
Okay. Is that how you make the distinction over there?
Yeah, not whales. Whales.
Okay, all right. Like not from Prince Charles.
A cool whip.
Okay.
Yes.
It's not Christian Bale's penis.
No. Several people had pledged their penises over the years, including an American, a Briton, and a German.
They pledged their penis.
But Arison's was the first to be successfully donated. Hjartarson said, "I have just been waiting for this guy for 15 years. Hjartarson's museum started in Reykjavik, but has since moved to Husavik.
I don't understand anything here. What is the... What do you mean it's hard... It's hard to pledge your penis?
It's hard.
Is that like it's how it's hard to rock a rhyme? I don't understand. What does that mean?
Well, no, several people had pledged their penises, but apparently for some reason...
Sounds like they're cleaning it with some sort of... Like some sort of home-based... You know, like they want to give it a good waxy sheen, you know, like a desk or a dining room table.
This was the first one that was successfully, you know, harvested and sent to the museum.
Please do not pledge your penis here.
The Phallological Museum is an important part of the region's tourist industry, bringing in thousands of visitors every summer. Highlights of the museum's collection include a 67-inch sperm whale penis preserved in formaldehyde, lampshades made from bull testicles, and what the museum described as an unusually big penis bone from a Canadian walrus.
Okay.
Hjartarson, 69, said his interest in what he calls phallology began when, as a youngster in rural Iceland, he was given a whip made from a bull's penis to help him herd cattle. Later, when he worked at a school near a whaling station, colleagues brought him whale penises as gifts.
Very rarely do I sit here and just wish that I was incredibly high, but this is one of those moments.
Hjartarson started the museum.
That name, it's not like you're convincing anybody that that's the actual real pronunciation, by the way. Doesn't matter how often you say it. It's not like we hear it and go, that sounds accurate. I bet that's a phonetically correct rendering of that name. Well done, Dawn.
She said it six times. It must be so.
Must be right.
He started the museum 15 years ago with 62 specimens. Now, with the addition of Arison's organ, he has 276. Many suspended in formaldehyde or dried and mounted on the walls. They have if you go to the museum's website, you can see pictures. It says it shows a small army of ghostly whitish penises stuffed into jars, large glass cylinders, and large aquariums. There are also sculptures, molds, and penis-related craft items. Outside the museum has a large tree trunk carved into the shape of an erect phallus.
Okay.
So there you go, Hjartarson.
Okay. a small army of ghostly white penises.
Yes.
So here's
stuffed
the thing.
Into jars.
Here's the thing. Sometimes... sometimes I think that when you urge us to do a story like this early on, that you just don't, you know, that maybe you're not accurate in your assessment of the story's content and tone. You were right, really. That was a penis story that it was correct to do that now, as opposed to like 10 minutes from now when Anna Griffin is in the studio
Thank
with
you.
Us.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you for respecting my judgment.
Somebody says, I thought philology was the study of Christmas. Okay, that's not – it looks funnier if you read it.
Probably.
Okay. Are we done with that?
We are.
Okay, there you go. We'll just end the
– Take a look at my enormous penis and my troubles start a-melting away. I take a look at my enormous penis and everything is going my way.
The special says Dawn led into the Peanuts Watch by saying, let's get this over with. Sounds like she says that quite a bit. All right. Let's do one more here, and then we'll take a break, come back with Anna Griffin on the other side.
Okay. Now I'm going to read this hair story.
What was that guy's name, his first name?
Oh, the Hardjartson
yeah,
guy?
Yeah.
It was Sigurdur.
Okay. All right.
Sigurdur Hardjartson.
Okay. Just checking.
Oh, let's do something somewhat serious. Authorities in Long Island, New York can't say much about the investigation into human remains found over the past few months, including remains found earlier this week of a possible ninth victim. Suffolk County Police Commissioner Richard Dormer feels pretty confident the bodies were dumped and that a killer is probably not in the area.
From the four remains that were found and identified, the business that they were in, okay, indicated that whoever was targeting these individuals was doing it because of their business. And so that's why I said we don't have somebody running around Suffolk County with blood dripping from a knife.
I just go nuts for serial killers.
I like the way he just kept saying the business they were, like he's killing accountants.
I mean, it's...
The guy's killing hookers who advertise on Craigslist.
Yes.
But it's the business they were in. He's killing certified accountants.
He has a more enlightened attitude about it.
Dormer was asked if the eight or more victims could have been killed by more than one person.
Open mind on this investigation. And that's the way you do a case like this. So we're looking at all aspects of this, all possibilities.
Ya-cha-cha-cha-cha.
All aspects of this.
I don't know. I just can't get past the voice for some reason because he doesn't even really sound like he's from New York. He just sounds like he's from. He sounds like he's from Tin Pan Alley or something. He just has like a weird like Jimmy Durante thing going on. All right. Okay. Are we? Are we done with that story now?
I think we are, yes.
Okay, we should just take a break here.
Should we?
We're just going to do something else. We'll come back. We've got Anna Griffin from The Oregonian is going to be in the studio with us at and then at 3 o'clock we'll talk to Mr. David Walker. Don't forget, if you want to hear Dawn mangle further pronunciations and have awkward discussion about sexual relations with her husband, you can do that this afternoon or not, I don't know, at 4 o'clock. That is 4 o'clock Pacific time at Cascadia.fm, in front of Ham-Fisted Radio with Bobby Fatboy Roberts. That is this afternoon, 4 o'clock at Cascadia.fm for Ham-Fisted Radio. We'll do this. We'll come back on the other side. Don't go anywhere. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. Stay right there.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Wondering what are you doing Friday night? We can make out under the stars and see them shine. 'Cause I'm sure you are the one. Please listen to this song. Hey, Liv Tyler, do you wanna go out with me? 'Cause I can't stop thinking about you, can't you see? And I want you to know sing you a song. We'll go see your rock show and your dad can come along.
each other's name tattooed on our arms. We'll drive up to Vegas, right there we'll prove our love. Cause I'm sure you are the one. Please listen to this song. Hey, Liv Tyler, do you wanna go out with me? Cause I can't stop thinking about you, can't you see? And I want you to know I'm not like those stupid movie stars you're used to. Cause I really would be true, true to you. Only you.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Working all day for a mean little man with a clip on tie and a rub on tan. He's got me running around the office like a dog around a track. But when I get back home, you're always there to rub my back. Hey, Julie, look what they're doing to me. Trying to trip me up, trying to wear me down. Julie, I swear it's so hard to bear it. And I'd never make it through without you around. No, I'd never make it through without you around. I got a desk full of paper that means nothing at all. Sometimes I catch myself staring into space, counting down the hours till I get to see your face. Hey, Julie, look what they're doing to me. Trying to trip me up, trying to wear me down. Julie, I swear it's so hard to bear it. And I'd never make it through without you around. No, I'd never make it through without you around. How did it come to be that you and I must be far away from each other every day? Why must I spend my time filling up my mind with facts and figures that never add up anyway? They never add up anyway. Soup stain tie. He's got me running around the office like a turtle on a wheel. He can tell me what to do, but he can't tell me what to feel. Hey, Julie, look what they're doing to me. Trying to trip me up, trying to wear me down. Julie, I swear it's so hard to bear it. And I'd never make it through without you around. No, I'd never make it through without you around. No, I'd never make it through without you around.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
The Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. 503-505-7206. 6964, thank you for joining us on this Wednesday. I just got to minimize this window for now. I can't even look at any of these. If you'd like to email us, it's rick at rickeverson.com. We have to put up some sort of like one of those blast shields they have on they had on Airwolf. I gotta have one of those that goes up in the middle of the table or something so I can just not have to make eye contact with Don occasionally, because then it makes it difficult to retain my composure. There was this whole thing. I won't put us all in a terribly awkward position by bringing it up now, but I will say that as we welcome to the Rick Emerson radio program from the Oregonian, author of a 3 times weekly column about life in Portland and Multnomah County, Anna Griffin, there was this long conversation that happened at the beginning of the program that it started off on an awkward foot, and then it just became... And then it became monumentally awkward. Then it became unbelievably awkward. Then it became mind-bogglingly awkward. And then we went to a news story, which was more awkward than all of the previous conversation put together and multiplied exponentially. And the only saving grace there was that we got it all done before you joined us in the studio today. Because it would have just been...
It's always fun when I get in here because I don't, you know, I'm in the car coming from something, and so I don't get to listen to the beginning of the show on the days when I'm on. And then I like to go back and listen and hear what I missed.
My
head.
Yeah, you might want to give that a 3 count before you actually do it today, and just give yourself an out. Hello, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I have to say, before we do anything else, before we talk about whatever that news or any of that stuff. So you mentioned in the past, you just said this right before we came on today. So in the past, you've talked about your son having this sort of that you were introducing him to classic films sort of in stages, in waves.
It's part of my master plan to turn him into a nerd without my spouse realizing it.
Is that the thing? You're like cooking the frog slowly.
Yeah, totally. You can't do it all at once because his body would reject all the geekiness that I'm trying to shove down his throat.
Now I sort of assumed it was a whole house of nerds. Is it like where one parent is really into hard rock and one parent's really into show tunes, and then there's a sort of push-pull about which direction the kid's going to go musically?
No, we are the least glamorous lesbians in the world. We're like the women of the L word. We are the inverse of that. And so we're both sort of geeky, but I am the mega geek. I'm the professional geek.
I see. So you're a geek to the core.
I am the one who has Star Wars bobbleheads by my desk. Yes,
excellent.
And I consult with them sometimes.
So, he saw the original trilogy Star Wars films at one point. That's a thing, right? We've had the discussion. How old was he when you showed those to him?
He was. I think he was 6 when he began seeing them.
Okay, and then did you space them out, or did you do it all once?
I tried to space it out a little
bit.
I wanted to make it worthwhile.
But the big deal was that he was ramping up to watching Raiders of the Lost Ark for the first time.
That was I told him he had to be 8 because he had many friends who saw the most recent movie, which I refused to acknowledge.
You don't wanna,
and
no.
Nothing with Shia LaBeouf actually is allowed to be placed in the pantheon.
There's a filter at your house that just weeds it out.
That's exactly right. And so I told him 8 was when he could see the original Raiders, and we watched it. We watched it this past weekend, and it was.
Was it glorious?
It was. It really. I had forgotten. It'd been 20 years since I'd seen that, and I'd forgotten how good it is.
It really does hold up. I mean, it's astoundingly good, and everything you want from an action film. It is. I don't necessarily know that I believe this to be the case, but I heard someone who. Who was it that you were telling me, Don, the friend of yours that said that Jaws was not the best American film, but was the definitive American film?
Yeah, that was Doug Holm. Local critic.
I like that.
And I think Eric Snyder and I were talking about that, about the idea that Jaws is the definitive American film in some ways. I had somebody, and I forget who, but I had a friend of mine who said that he didn't know if it was true, but that he had no argument with the assertion that Raiders of the Lost Ark was the definitive action adventure film of all time. And I can't think of anything that surpasses it. I mean, really, right offhand.
I had forgotten, I guess because I didn't pay attention to this kind of things when it first came out and, seeing it intermittently over the years, I had just forgotten how wholeheartedly they threw themselves into making it an homage to the old serials.
Oh, yeah.
It's just awesome. And the violence is all shticky and the dialogue at points makes you groan a little bit, but it's all for the purpose of serving the greater homage to...
They play it straight. There's no... That's the great thing about Raiders of the Lost Ark, which in retrospect, it was just... inevitable that they would sequelize it, but it's just a fool's mission to try to I mean, that is lightning in a bottle. I mean, there's just, you can only, that's a bell that you can only really ring once, I think, you know, and get it that right, get it that perfect.
And my son is, he's eight, and so he understands that movies are not real and that they're actors, but he's still, it still hasn't quite sunk in what that means. So I had the joy of at one point explaining to him, Indiana Jones, doesn't he look like somebody from another movie that you really like? And, like, you could see the dawning that this was – that Han Solo and Indiana Jones were the same person. And it was just like the world was all new to him.
I wonder if it's, you know, the concept of acting, and it was such a bizarre thing anyway. So I wonder if there's some golden moment in his head before he understands and you know, and really deconstructs the whole notion of what it is to act, where he's just convinced that Han Solo is like the greatest badass in all of the world, because when he's not flying the Millennium Falcon, he is in fact sidelining as an action adventure hero fighting Nazis, which really would make him the greatest, you know. Or if it's just some sort of a universe equivalence thing, where every universe has a variation on that guy, he is sort of a Joseph Campbell made whole, made flesh thing.
And they all look like that guy dating Calista Flockhart.
I mean, you know, where the hero with a thousand faces actually just exists in every dimension. There is that guy, not unlike the universal gin and tonic thing from Douglas Adams we were talking about yesterday. The thing about Raiders of the Lost Ark, though, is that they play it totally straight, that there's no camp there. I mean, it's fun, but fun is not the same thing as camp, and camp and kitsch are different than fun and adventure and enjoyment.
Right.
There's that story about how when Lucas was in the editing stage of Star Wars, of Episode 4, that he had to fire his editor at one point because he saw he was looking at some of the dailies and the way they were putting it together, and the editor was cutting for camp effect. And I guess Lucas, whatever you want to say about him and how he eventually, you know, what he eventually sort of became in terms of a filmmaker, that was his crucial decision. He's like, he said, these movies are fun, but they're not campy. And he said there was just no meeting of the minds, and so he had to fire the editor. And that really made all the difference, because the real pure joy of those movies comes from the fact that it is a thrill ride. But a thrill ride, it's like you have to, you know, you have to take the absurdity seriously for it to really work with some things. I mean, that was what might seem to be unrelated, but that was the greatness of Arrested Development. Mm-hmm. Is, and I think Jeffrey Tambor in an interview actually said at one point, he said, our words and our scenarios may be absurd, but our intention is sincere. And when you think about it, that is the crux, that is the key to why a show like Arrested Development worked, and it's the key to why Indiana Jones works. And that is, and that was a thing that they had very, very, very scant returns on when they got to like the fourth one, for example, where it did seem that they were investing in absurdities without actually giving them any sort of realistic grounding.
Such a horrible Aliens, really?
Yeah,
I'm sorry. Did I just ruin it for someone who hasn't seen it? I apologize.
No, you didn't really ruin it. No. That was already ruined.
Yeah,
that was the moment when the fourth one really lost me was that I was sitting next to Tim Riley. Tim and I were within, I think Court and Bobby may have been there, but they had seen it the night before, actually, because the KUFO had done a premiere on a Friday night, and then our station, 970, I think is where we were doing the premiere, I think, on a Saturday. And so I didn't see it on Friday because I wanted to sort of be fresh for it. So they saw it on Friday and Saturday, or on Friday night, and then they stuck around. They came out to sort of say hey to their listeners and whatever on Saturday. And so Tim and I are there, and Court and Bobby are there, and the lights get ready to go down, and they started gathering up their stuff, and I said, hey, it's the new Indiana, you're not going to stick around and see it a second time? And Court just looked at me and he goes, no, you'll understand. And then he just left. I was like, he doesn't know what could they do to make this movie unwatchable the second time? And it was the moment that Shia LaBeouf just started swinging on vines through the forest. And I actually just turned to Tim, and Tim looked at me, and it was that moment of like a shared acknowledgement that didn't even require any words. And we just sort of did like a small shake of the head and then went back to watching
it. That is a horrible feeling, though. You're sitting in a movie theater and you have been waiting for this thing. And in the case of a movie like that, you've been waiting years for this thing.
Yeah.
And there's this slow dawning realization that this just bites.
This doesn't work. And you will sometimes, I used to have this with I buy a new record, I buy a compact disc or whatever, and I would take it home, and there's that to me, the greatest moment. I am a guy who is all about the anticipation. As much as I sometimes view myself as being destination oriented, not journey oriented. For me, the greatest moment is not the journey. It's not the destination. It is the instant before you arrive at the destination. So my favorite moment at a concert is when the lights go off, but the band hasn't started playing yet, because it's just that instant of anticipation, of anticipatory giddiness. And so, you know, you would buy a CD, especially if it was a band that, you know, were a big fan of, and you were waiting for their new album to come out, and you read about it, or maybe you heard like a single or something, but you didn't really know much about it. You take it home, you take off the shrink wrapping and the whatever, and you take the CD and you put it in, or you drop the needle down, and then there's that moment right before you hear the first song, because at that instant, it is just perfect. It has the potential to be the greatest album you have ever heard, to be a master. And it's almost never a masterpiece, and sometimes it's just flat out bad. But in that instant, you're like, this is it. I am about to hear what could be a glorious work of just splendiferous magic. And it was that same thing at Crystal Skull, where the lights go down and you see like the Lucasfilm logo or whatever, and you're just thinking, this is awesome. And then it starts, and just like with a bad record, you get a few minutes in and you go, well, that wasn't so hot, but okay, but I got 10 more tracks, or I got 90 more minutes in this. Surely it will improve. You know, they don't want to lead with their right. Maybe they're ramping up to the greatness. And then there's that horrible instant where you pass that event horizon within yourself and you go, this is never going to get any better. This is just crap, and it's going to stay crap. But, you know.
I remember the giddy excitement with which I greeted Tim Burton's Planet of the Apes remake.
Oh, yes.
And even though I was surrounded by people who kept telling me that I was foolish for hoping that it would be awesome.
Well, yeah.
Because my thing with Tim Burton is I always think that I love Tim Burton until I, until I see another Tim Burton movie, and then I go, oh, this is disappointing. I completely forget. I have this amnesia.
Is it like buying a new Chuck Palahniuk novel?
Yes.
And then you read it
exactly
and you go,
like that.
You go, wait a minute, I don't really like these.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. I've hated the last five of these. Why did I pay for this?
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
How did you feel about his Alice in Wonderland?
I didn't care for it. I loved the art direction and the costuming and a lot of the visual stuff, but I hated, it's just the fact that it was one of those retrofitted 3D things that just really kind of destroyed it and made it sort of horrible. I kind of admired it in concept, though.
I ask because my spouse and I watched it on Netflix streaming a couple weeks ago without the 3D. We had really purposely not gone to see it in the theater because I was just so turned off by what he did to Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed it. Stripped of any expectations.
I think if you saw it without the 3D, it would have been a lot better, because I did see it in 3D. And my God, you know, it's like same thing with Clash of the Titans,
right,
which was a terrible movie and
made worse by
the fact it had been shot in 2D and then transferred to 3D, which is murky and dark and strange. And humans never look really, truly three-dimensional. They just look like these sort of flat cutouts that are stacked in front of other things. And so the 3D Alice in Wonderland, it was pretty awful. But at the same time, I just kept going. So much of just the visual design of it was like with pretty much all Tim Burton movies. It was awesome. It was amazing.
Yeah. Well, and that is it. That a movie like that, which is, and I agree with your assessment on it, that it was just and I fortunately saw it in 2D. I didn't see it in 3D, but because the thing about 3D is it's like you're just watching everything through some sort of dirty cheesecloth. You know, it's like you're looking at it through a stained window of some kind, and added to which your eye is constantly doing that thing of trying to find the focus, which is why I think 3D movies, like, they give you like a migraine after a while, because your eyes. There was actually a fascinating article I read about this, and I forget who sent it to me, but it was an explanation as to why 3D movies give you a blinding headache after a while. And I never really thought about it. And they said that 3D films are in fact a thing that evolution has never prepared you to deal with, because they've only existed for like 50 years or something, which is like not even a blink of an eye in evolutionary terms. And they say that your brain is – when you're looking at something that is, you know, on the other side of the street or across, you know, the side of a field or something, that your brain focuses on it as though it's way over there. But when you are looking at something right in front of you, your brain focuses in a whole different way. And so what this does is it forces your brain to try to use two completely different sorts of focusing at the same time that in nature are never used together. And so your brain keeps racking back and forth between two focuses going, it's far away, it's up close, it's far away, it's up, something isn't right. And your brain is constantly shuttling back and forth between two kinds of focus, trying to figure – it's like when your DVD player starts to skip a little bit and you hear the reader inside go and shuttling back and forth trying to find the track. And that apparently is why it screws with your head after a while. At the very least, that movie was a good palette for Tim Burton because he could get away with just all kinds of insane, over-the-top, absurdist imagery because it's Alice in Wonderland, as opposed to the Planet of the Apes, where like you had no rational basis to expect anything good there. I mean, there's no – the component parts of that are not such that you would ever
– Okay. Well, here's the thing. I love Tim Burton, and I love movies with monkeys.
Well, okay.
I just, for days before that, you don't
love Tim Burton is the thing.
Well, and the thing is,
you love
though,
the idea
you've
of
forgotten
Tim Burton.
Already. But it happened again.
But there are so many of his movies that I love that it makes me forget that his hit to miss ratio, you know, isn't necessarily the best.
I am a big government liberal, and I firmly believe that Congress should pass a law banning anyone but James Cameron and Pixar from making 3D movies.
Nobody else has made anything that was really notable. I'm trying to think if I've ever seen a 3D movie not associated. And I actually didn't even see Toy Story 3D, but I sort of trust him implicitly. But I, you know, the only other 3D movie I've ever seen that, and I have problems with Avatar, but at least, you know, the 3D execution of it, you got it, you know, was well done. Actually, you know, I will say, as dumb as this sounds, I will say that that Piranha 2010 was actually pretty great.
That was.
Piranha 3D was actually not bad at all.
And my problem is that I just, as a rule, and Piranha, I didn't see Piranha 3D in 3D is my problem, but I still love the movie anyway. But I just very much dislike 3D that is sort of mapped onto live action because I think
on.
It just doesn't work. But I've liked a lot of 3D animated films. I think that there are a number of animated films that have come out in the last couple of years that they actually did 3D appropriately and because it was factored into the creation of it. How to Train Your Dragon was actually quite good. Despicable Me was good. And I mean, and it was kind of – it was all done – I don't want to say subtly, but it was done appropriate to the story. It wasn't just like, and here's something in your face to show up we're doing 3D,
right.
You know?
So we should amend my piece of legislation to include pretty much
live
anything.
Action,
anything in the animated field can be 3D.
Because even in Avatar, the live action scenes that were 3D,
if
you
Avatar
still have that,
had not
that
been
flat
3D,
people thing.
You would have walked out after about an hour and a half.
I actually have at home, and I've been waiting for the opportunity to sort of this is one of those things that seems like a great idea in my head that I will probably not actually do. But I have a 3-pack of when I say classic, it's not really old 3D films. I have at home Jaws 3D, Amityville 3D, and Friday the 13th 3D, all of which require like the weird like blue and red spectacles, which I do not possess.
The way God intended 3D to be seen.
Exactly. The way that God and Roger Corman meant for it to be seen. And so I have those at home, and I've just been waiting for the right opportunity to do a terrible schlocky 3D film night at my home. Hey, by the way, so this is... I didn't mean to do this, but this is a perfect segue, actually, the Jaws 3D segue into what I was going to talk about. And then we'll get to some news. We'll talk about what's coming up in the Oregonian, all of that. So I mentioned during the top of the show that that I had a thing to talk about with my mom. And there's actually there's two different things here. And I'll work backward. So this July, so my mom is going to be turning 75. And my mom is – I love my mom. My mom is very much a she's a simple woman in many ways. Grew up in a very small town, lives in a small town now. I mean, you know, my hometown has, I think, now 30,000 people, and she talks about sort of moving somewhere else that's less hectic. She wants to, you know, go to a place that's less hurly-burly, except she doesn't say that. And it's that thing you always hear about, you know, the people will joke about as parents get older, they just sort of turn into a different person altogether, sometimes for the better, sometimes not. But my mom is, you know, when I was growing up, my mom was going through this whole stage of Christian zealotry, and it was just very unpleasant. But as she has gotten older, I don't know, I think that she's just, it's just one of those things where, you know, she's, you just pass some point in your aging where you just, you know, you're like, well, I'm going to make, you know, I'm going to live this life while I'm here. So she's done a whole bunch. You know, she went to she and my wife went to New York for about a week and a half. And so my mom, you know, there's this whole thing of them like taking some boat tour like through Niagara Falls or something and just doing all of the stuff that I never would have imagined my mom doing growing up. And so we'll get to another one of those in a second, but we're going to Vegas for her 75th anniversary in July. And the idea, I mean, first of all, of my mom ever going to Vegas, I mean, if you could just look through some window of time and just see the woman who raised me, I would just come home and my Alice Cooper records would be thrown in the trash, and she would be sitting there, you know, with some Bible-wielding friend of hers just to sit me down in a room and give me a long, long discussion about how I was trending down a path to damnation by listening to, you know, to Kiss records or whatever. So my mom has decided that she wants to go to Vegas for her 75th anniversary, and so my wife was online and she was booking us, and I don't even know where it was. It was at the booking us a hotel room somewhere, but I swear to God, at this hotel, I don't know if it's just like the swimming pool, or if it's a swimming pool that is an adjunct to the room or to the bar or something. But I swear to God, if you go into the swimming pool has a giant glass tube that goes through the center of it, in which are sharks. Which is exactly, if I recall correctly, which is sort of how Jaws 3D is set up, right?
Yeah, I think
because
so.
It isn't like a Marine World thing, and there's a giant glass tube filled with sharks, and then at one point one of the sharks becomes cross about something or other and sort of rams into the tube until it shatters and breaks. So
yeah.
Do you have any idea of the casino I'm talking about? Because I don't exactly know where it is.
No.
Because we usually stay like on Fremont Street, sort of in old Vegas. But I guess it's going to be kind of closer to the Strip. And there's some where you can where you're just like – and I think if you get the right room – it may be that Spielberg place, because he had the restaurant, but then he also had a casino that was going to be partially underground and submerged, like an Atlantis-themed thing. But apparently, if you're willing to fork over the dough for it, you can actually get a room where one of the walls looks out into the swimming pool where there are just sharks there all the time, which just seems horrible and great, like, all at once.
I just like the idea of a shark getting cross.
Yeah, well,
just,
you know.
Just feeling a little, you know, grumpy today.
Becoming Pete, having a little too much Quaid in one day and just deciding to take out the trash. Anyway, so I'm going to try to find out more about it, but there's some – she's going to send me some pictures of this. But apparently I will be – in July, I will be in Vegas over the weekend with my mom for her birthday at a hotel where you can quite literally swim, maybe not with, but next to sharks, which is either awesome or not. That's less interesting than this, than the fact that I go home the other day, and it's become one of those things where my wife talks to my mom like way more than I do. You know, like I, you know, not that I had no problem.
Isn't
with
it better that way, though?
It really is. No, it's great. It's like she's a flak jacket sort of taking the slug for me, because she actually seems to enjoy it. Not that I don't love my mom at all, but it's like, you know.
But it's nice. They have this thing in common. They love you.
Yeah, well, and sometimes also, you know that.
And they're annoyed by you.
However much you However much you love a parent or a relative, you know, sometimes it's, you know, sometimes you are calling or visiting because you just sort of go, well, I guess it's been 3 months since I've gone to visit, or, you know, or I haven't called this week. I guess I should just do whatever. But I'll go home and it's like, you know, it's like they're just clatching on the phone or whatever. But my mom was listing off all of the things that, you know, they did in New York and how much, you know, they were – because they were trading photographs or something that they'd taken. And so Lauren's like, well, so what do you want to do while while we're in Vegas in July? Do you have anything in particular you want to do, anything you want to see? And so my mom, who again, it's impossible to overstate the degree to which the fire of the Holy Spirit burned within my mother when I was a teenager, when I was growing up. So I don't know what happened, or if this is going to be one of those things like on House where they're going to find like a walnut-sized tumor in her head and that's why she's become so liberal over the last few years. But so my mom revealed that while we're in Vegas that she wishes to – and this is not what it initially sounded like. This tells you everything you need to know about my mom. The upshot is that my mom revealed to my wife that she wants to see a drag show while she's in Vegas, which is not really a thing that you anticipate your mom asking to see, except she didn't even know it was called a drag show. She called it, quote, a man show, which I thought was something else altogether. I thought that was a lot of, like, look at my tight trousers and, you know, and woo, now they're
and they
gone.
And they do have those. The thunder from down under,
well,
yes.
That would have been even worse. Like, the idea of that would have been, like, so horrifying as to just defy description. The idea of my wife and my mother going to see, like, some sort of guy shaking his business, you know, like, tackle out on stage. There's not enough therapy in the world for that. And so my wife was like, and I think she had the same idea. She's like, man show? What are you referring to? And it turns out that my mom has something. Now I have turned into the parent going, where would you have heard about that? You shouldn't even know what that is. But it's like my mom has it in her head so now that she wants to see a drag show when we all go to Vegas in July, which is
her,
so
you
weird.
You should take her to – get her here and take her to see Darcelle first just to prepare her.
I don't know – And this has nothing to do with the fact that it's a drag show. I don't really know that I would take anybody to see to do ourselves at this point because Sarah and I, Sarah Dillon, my producer, former producer, and I went to Darcelle's at one point. It was me and Sarah and a few other people, and I think Laura was there too. And it's like, and that went badly. I don't know if Darcelle is always it seemed to be well into her cups. That night, and that ended up being a decidedly unpleasant experience for
really?
Several people in the party.
Were there some?
Well, what happened is that there were like four or five of us there, and Darcelle's is not it's not a big place
it's
inside.
Cramped. It's cramped. It's tiny.
It is a cozy.
You make very close friends with the
yeah.
people around you.
And so, but the problem with that is that Darcelle, you know, and Darcelle has a persona which is very sort of, you know, spiky and saucy and whatever, and that's all great. But the problem is that we were there and. Immediately next to us were some people we didn't know. You end up, as you said, just sitting next to strangers. So there's some people we didn't know sitting next to us, one of whom was really drunk and really loud. And they weren't heckling, but they were talking. They were carrying on their own conversation while Darcelle was on stage. And that doesn't play.
Doesn't go well with Darcelle, no.
And so Darcelle, you know, was like getting really pissed off that there was somebody in the crowd talking during the set. And looked out, and Sarah was right next to whoever was talking. And it just lit into Sarah thinking that she had done it. And Sarah, and you can understand why. Just she was answering me saying, "Well, it wasn't really, you know, it wasn't really me." But of course, that just inflamed the problem by talking back and saying it wasn't me. And so it was like she just had a target on her head for the rest of the night. And we ended up leaving after about half an hour. It was very unpleasant. We don't want to get on those crosshairs.
I find now that going to see Darcelle is it part of the entertainment for me now is the stress and the tension of.
What's going to happen?
Is Darcelle going to make it through the whole show?
Yeah. Is there going to be just some breakdown that happens?
Because it is amazing that she gets up there every night at her age.
Right.
And I do believe there's some imbibing that takes place.
Yeah. No, the libations were flowing freely backstage, on stage, everywhere.
The next time my mother's in town, I'm planning on taking her just for the – and I don't think she's ever been to see a man show before.
Yeah. I had the same idea for just a moment of thinking, well, maybe we should start small. We'll just take it ourselves and just see it. But I think that experience coupled with the fact that – I mean, it's like we're going to be in Vegas anyway and – you know, why not just, you know, why not just kind of blow her mind right out of the gate by taking – because, I got to imagine that in Vegas there's – I mean, that's one – I mean, I would imagine one of the handful of cities in America where you're really going to see that some of the finer –
Play to the major leagues there, I would think.
Yeah, some of the finer drag shows in existence. So, anyway.
Combine that with a Rita Rudner show and you've got a weekend for mom.
Well, last time was the Osmonds. So, I mean, we might as well just go to both ends of the spectrum. So if anybody has suggestions on, you know, the preeminent drag show to see in in Vegas. I think that what sealed the deal for her was the idea that as long as you were gambling, they would just continue to bring you white Russians. So I think she is...
There is no happier place on earth than Vegas.
No, it really is. Vegas is great, but it's sort of like being in... What is it? And I can never remember this. Is it in Pinocchio where the boys go and then they have fun and they turn into donkeys or
yes,
something?
Yes.
That's how Vegas is for me, except that it's like 2 or 3 days of excitement. And then after about, I don't know... It's like eating at Taco Bell or something, or just some food where it's like you get one mouthful too much, and you go, oh, and it turns on you.
Yes.
After about 2.5-3 days in Vegas, then that's where it immediately becomes
because
a place
because you
that
haven't been outdoors in 2.5 or 3 days. You've just been walking through tunnels from one place to another.
And awake all like on a weird fragmented schedule and eating too much and yet, you know, and eating too much of exactly the wrong kind of food because it's just a buffet of like hot wings and waffles. This is awesome. And then you reach that point about 3 days in where you go, I feel sick and
when
ashamed.
When you find yourself naked in the chocolate fondue fountain, that's when you know it's time to stop.
Yeah, I have to go home now. But then about a year later, you're ready to do it all over again. Oh. So Vegas is like the experience of drunkenness, I think, writ large, where it's, you know, enjoyable, pleasant, fun, great, awesome, terrible. Followed by vowing that you will never, ever do that again.
Until you do.
For the love of God. We've gotten so far off point.
Well, I have some breaking news.
Really? Is it actual breaking news?
It is actual breaking news. Is like, breaking right this moment.
All right, hold on. Here's breaking news from Don Taylor.
The jury has returned in Barry Bonds' perjury trial and found him guilty of obstruction of justice. But the jury deadlocked on all the other charges.
Why does that make me happy that they found him guilty of something?
I don't know, but apparently it's this was just right like this minute.
So do we know?
Just released.
Well, what could, do we know? What he could be? What could he receive as a punishment? Because obstruction of justice seems like that's a serious thing.
Yeah, not yet. Don't know yet, but yeah, no, that's fairly serious.
All right, so breaking news: Barry Bonds found guilty of obstruction of justice. Justice, not so on perjury, though.
Right.
So how did he obstruct justice if he didn't perjure himself? I wonder.
I don't know.
Interesting. All right, so more on that as it develops. Just to wrap all of this up, to bring it back around to the beginning. So Raiders of the Lost Ark, which somehow led us to this discussion of Las Vegas and my mom.
Some of my favorite things. We're just going to talk about my favorite things today.
That's fine.
Next, that is, steak.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
How do you prefer your steak?
Close to rare, but not quite.
All right. Excellent. No, I'm okay with that.
I like blood, you know.
You should just – that should just be on your – you know, not even a business card, like a plaque on your desk.
I like blood.
So your kid watched Raiders of the Lost Ark. Your son watched Raiders of the Lost Ark, and he – but he loved it.
He loved it.
Yeah. Because to go back to the point I think that we were originally making, which is that they do it straight-faced, and there's no winking and nodding at the camera. And there is – while the violence is sort of – is shticky and cartoony in a way, you know, it's also a strange combination of violence that doesn't seem evil. It doesn't, you know, it's fun, but at the same time, there are those moments of real peril and menace, like when he falls into a big pit full of snakes. I mean, there's just no getting around the fact that that's just creepy and nerve-wracking.
And we watched it in Philadelphia for my nephew's bar mitzvah. My nephew is 13, obviously, he just got bar mitzvahed, and has a ball python. And my son spent most of the weekend holding the snake. And between that and realizing during the snake scene in Indiana Jones that I really don't like snakes, mm-hmm. he has decided that he wants nothing more.
Really? Is that he's sort of maxed out?
He wants a snake. That's what he wants. Wants
oh,
a snake.
I see. Oh,
yeah.
So it's
a snake. Give me a snake.
And so is that a thing that's going to happen, do you think?
I don't believe so, no. Not if I have anything to say about it.
He'll be distracted from that topic every time he brings it up. Excellent. Well, I'm glad that I'm glad that he liked it just because we were talking before the show about you know nerds and geeks having to stick together because it, like the worst possible world, if you showed it to him and he just disdained it.
Oh, I my job as a parent is done. My son would sleep until he's already like a teenager. He would sleep till 10 every day if I let him. Got up this morning at 6:30 and found that he was already awake and he had his little light on in his bed and. And he started the fourth Harry Potter book last night and got up early to start reading again this morning.
Got up early to start reading.
I'm done.
You've done well.
No more work for me to do as a parent.
Congratulations. You should flash freeze them in carbonite right now so that they can't ever disappoint you.
And he's the same guy as Indiana Jones, frozen in carbonite.
At the news desk, here is Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Well, sneaky snakes.
Thank you, Don.
A 22-year-old man remained in critical condition today after he was bitten by a venomous pet snake Monday night. Milwaukee, Wisconsin area domestic animal control division officers found more than two dozen reptiles in Jeremy Loveland's St. Francis home.
He's one of those guys.
Officials identified the snake that bit Loveland as a Gaboon viper. He knew what to do, said Loveland's grandmother, Barbara Raman. He knew it down pat. He had a folder that would tell the people at the hospital what they would have to do and stuff like that. We stopped the poison from going up his arm. Zoo curator Craig Berg was called around 10:30 p.m. Monday and asked to bring an anti-venom to Froedtert Hospital, where Loveland was being treated. Berg said, the Gaboon viper can produce the highest volume of venom, and it has 2-inch fangs, so it can get that venom very deep. Neighbor said Loveland often spoke about his snake collection. A neighbor said, they were like the love of his life. They were his pets.
If you have a pet and at some point you got to find yourself creating a folder for, like what to do in case I am savagely attacked by this animal, you have chosen poorly.
Why do crazy cat ladies get such a bad rap, but young men with snake collections, we hear nothing about them?
I don't really know the answer to that. I will say that we only hear about them when the snakes inevitably turn on them, too.
Or when they turn on the general public.
Yeah. He was
such a quiet boy.
Exactly. As they're booking him into a crazy house somewhere and going through his possessions and they find 7,000 tarantulas.
Yeah, that guy who died and then they just found him later cocooned by all of his insects.
Yeah. No, there's this story that I'll have to dig up again at some point. We had this story. We used to do this. We used to do this bit that we have discontinued, but for a long time we did this bit called It's the Worst Story You've Ever Heard. It's the Worst Story in the History of the World was what it was called. And the deal was that we had two horrible news stories, and we would read them both, and the audience would vote on which was the worst or the more off-putting. And then that story would make it to the next week. And so we were constantly trying to find the worst story ever. And this story that was when we discontinued the feature went out on top was this about a guy in Germany who, crazy reptile guy, had dozens of snakes and millions of spiders and like flesh-eating lizards and, whatever. And at one point, as best the police could figure out in conjunction with the coroner, he was apparently feeding one of his terrariums full of black widows. And he sort of knocked it over or spilled it or something. And I think it was a bit of a chain reaction at that point, sort of a Rube Goldberg with big, googly eyes and fangs. And they just found him later. Yeah, sort of the animals had sort of divvied him up like an old impala.
They turned on daddy.
Yeah. And it was a sort of, okay, you get everything from the neck up. We want the lungs. And they just found him in several places.
There are just
places.
Certain animals that are not pets, no matter I don't care how pretty their little terrarium thing is. They're just not pets.
That's the thing.
This is why we have the Discovery Channel. If you find those things fascinating, you can watch videos of them, and then you don't have to worry about knocking over a
terrarium
full of them.
If you'd like to get a job in this field, that's great.
Yeah, that too.
All right.
People.
Remind me to send you the photos of the spiderweb-covered trees later on.
Oh, I've seen them.
Really?
They're disgusting.
Yeah.
Frightening.
No, it's completely looks like the entire island is enshrouded in fog.
The rule in my house is that we are not allowed to kill spiders. This is not my rule.
Because you would terminate with extreme prejudice.
While squealing, yes.
Yes. Do you do that thing of cringing as you're taking the broom? And
oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If spiders are spotted in your house, is that the thing you have to shoo them into a glass and then sort of dump them outside? Or, I mean, theoretically?
I just sort of scream at my spouse to come get them. And she knows when my voice reaches a certain pitch.
It's the spider tone.
It's something with more than four legs, yes.
Excellent. Here is Don Taylor.
Find the top of this. There we go. A Yale University student from Massachusetts died in an accident Tuesday night at the Stirling Chemistry Laboratory. Michelle Dufault's hair got caught in a lathe, a piece of machinery that spins very quickly, and it pulled her in. The Connecticut Medical Examiner's Office reported she died from accidental asphyxia by neck compression. A fire official.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't really. I wasn't really anticipating that.
Dufault was found sitting in a metal lathe with her hair wrapped around part of the machine.
Oh.
A lathe, it's a machine used for shaping wood, metal, or other material by way of a rotating drive.
Shaping your own demise.
That turns the material being worked on against cutting tools.
Jesus.
She was reportedly using the machine as she worked on her senior project. An employee at
Hairnet.
An employee at OSHA said they only have jurisdiction over accidents that involve paid workers. But by early afternoon, Ted Fitzgerald, a spokesman for the OSHA office in Boston, said after more fact gathering, they've decided to open an investigation and expected to be on the scene by 3 p.m.
Good
this
God almighty.
I'm going to get a haircut right now.
Yeah, no, that's one of those. There was a pizza place in my hometown, and there was and I don't know if this is a common thing, but the way that they would grind up the cheese is they had this stainless steel counter, and then there was basically just a big hole in the middle of the counter that was almost like a garbage disposal opening, but it was on this stainless steel counter, and it was sort of like a blender or a grinder that was at the bottom that was set down in this hole. So again, it was like a garbage disposal effectively in the middle of a countertop, and you would drop the cheese down inside, and then you would pull it out, or there was a basket or something underneath. But there was a guy at one point there who was had sort of not paid attention during the workplace safety video that they showed, and he had a necktie, and at one point he was leaning down to get something or to grab something or to ladle something onto something else, and his necktie got caught around the
no
sort of
kicks.
Whirling blades. Yeah. And and fortunately, it was that thing of a guy Ted, scissors, and across the room, threw woof, 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 a pair of scissors at him that he was able to cut the necktie loose on. But I mean, that's a the gardening tool shed, the workshop where your grandfather makes rocking chairs. They're just filled with whirling blades of doom that are looking to, not unlike nature, just looking to kill you.
It is a dangerous world.
Yeah.
It is not a good world we're in.
Full of things that want to poke and stab you. All right, then.
And full of feral pigs.
well, that too.
Feral hogs are on a rampage in a Fort Worth neighborhood, leaving a path of destruction behind. One day after landscapers fixed Jeannie Turek's yard.
What is a feral hog as opposed to just, you know?
They're wild hogs.
But I mean,
they're not like domesticated hogs. They're ones that live.
Is it in terms of temperament?
Well, they don't live on a farm. They live in the wild.
No, but I mean, but when you say, but we hear people, but you'll hear feral as an adjective, and it doesn't just mean where you live.
Because it's not sweet.
Like if you took them and put them in a house, they wouldn't become domesticated pigs. It just has to do with their behavior, right? Is that how they? When you hear something described as feral, is that just they don't recognize your authority as human?
Yes, I believe that's it. Yeah,
I don't think normal pigs start much of a ruckus.
Well, no.
When did this become a political science conversation about pigs?
It's just I hear that used as a sort of colloquial descriptor sometimes. I'll say, well, he's gone all feral. And I don't really know what that means. I just sort of assume it means that, you know, that the temperament has gone – has become more aggressive.
Well, in this case, I mean, there are also different breeds of pigs, like domesticated pigs that are bred for farming, for meat, are – often a completely different type of pig than the wild pigs.
And they have
that
a docility, I would imagine, that
probably
that wild
well,
pigs
yes.
do not.
Yes.
All right.
So this woman, Turek, and many of her neighbors moved into the Riverbend Estates neighborhood because it's on the south banks of the Trinity River and has beautiful wildlife. One of her neighbors, Larry Pauling, said, on the other side, there's a wildlife preserve as well as city parks. So it's all parkland to the north of us. And the pigs are obviously coming in from the Trinity River and it's not fenced. So they're going to keep coming. Pauling spotted 5 pigs late in the night and scared them off. He said, it sounded like a stampede of cattle just running by the side of the house. It scared me. The feral hogs feed at night and look for grubworms, pecans, acorns and roots.
And your toes.
And apparently they have no problem with just trampling up your lawn.
They've lost their fear of humans.
I have this thought of like a pig creeping through the brush and you just hear.
With like a black and sort of ski mask on. That was really unnerving. did it just start? Like did somebody turn on a pig faucet somewhere and they just began?
I guess it's been an ongoing problem. But like the woman said, she'd just gotten like her landscaping repaired after the last time the feral hogs came through. And now more feral hogs have come through and like knocked over her fences.
She had just made some bacon and kept the windows open and they were not happy with her.
It's Ted!
Turek called a trapper who told her it would not make sense to have one trap at her house. He then recommended she call her homeowners association and ask them to put traps in the entire neighborhood. Captain Neil Beeler, a Texas Parks and Wildlife game warden, said, you hardly ever trap them all. You may push them out of an area, and they may be gone for a year or two, but they could show up again.
I just – this image of just, you know, like getting up in the middle of the night to go to the kitchen to get a glass of water or something, and just looking at your window and just seeing a yard full of pigs.
Wild hogs.
Yeah. No,
glaring at you.
Seriously. You know, next thing you know, they're sitting at your table, you know, wearing your ties, forgetting their animals. You don't want that. All right. Here's Don Taylor.
Let's do our corpse watch.
Christ almighty. Oh, before we do the corpse watch here, because our good friend David Walker is actually going to be joining us via phone here in a short while to promote his book signing, which is happening tonight at Bridge City Comics. He's the author of Darius Logan, Super Justice Force. He's going to be signing that along with our good friend Mike Russell. There must be actual news of some kind happening to the Oregonian. It's not all just drag shows and pigs these days.
Sucker's here.
Is that the thing? It's actually begun? Has it actually started?
The Timbers have started the MLS season. I think they've had a couple games, and their first game at what was PG Park, what's now
Geldwin
Field.
Stadium or Field, yeah.
The Geldwin makes windows, and so Timbers supporters are trying to get us to call it the House of Pain. I refuse to do that.
What I'm glad you answered the question of what they do because Geldwin, I don't really know who they are. I just know that they sponsor lots of things.
They make
sponsor
windows.
Golf too.
Many, many windows.
All right. I can only ever judge whether the season has begun by the difficulty I have driving through or parking anywhere downtown.
Oh,
so.
Tomorrow's going to be very bad.
And you are a soccer enthusiast, are you not?
I enjoy soccer. I don't mind it. Yeah.
You're not to like Levy-esque proportions.
I am not. No,
but really,
I am
no
not.
One is.
No one
I am
is.
Not,
yeah.
No, no. And Sean has let me know that that's not acceptable. anytime I question using public money for this kind of thing, he brings an axe over to my desk and threatens to wrap a scarf around my neck tightly.
Here's a question. Actually, speaking of soccer and axes, who is behind that ad campaign, the billboard campaign? I mean, is that just them themselves, or do they retain an agency?
I believe that's Wieden Kennedy. I
mean,
it had to be. right?
It is tempting. Yeah, see, and it's tempting to just assume that every ad campaign that is awesome is Wieden Kennedy.
This one is fantastic.
It is fantastic. I mean, to the extent that I will be astounded if this ad campaign does not get immediately taken by other cities and either that they either retain Wieden Kennedy or they just flat out steal it. I mean, it really. Even by Wieden Kennedy standards, I mean, it's gold. I mean,
I was
it's wonderful.
Skeptical about when the first few billboards went up because the people that they featured were, you know, I think to succeed, the Timbers have to branch out beyond the Timbers Army.
Right.
You know, it's 16,000-17,000 seats over there, and they need to fill it, and it needs to be citywide. And so it needs to be, you know, middle class, upper middle class families going to games. And the first few ad campaigns were very... sort of stereotypical
guys coming to burgle your house.
Exactly.
Yeah.
With an axe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not scary at all. And a feral pig under his arm.
And a lathe.
Right.
But it was guys who looked like they just got off work at the auto parts store. And
but
were,
it
you
was
know.
But it was brilliant. I mean, yeah. They start with that and then they branched out and just they're hard to miss, and you immediately know what they're for.
And that's the other thing. It's like, and you know, and the God love the Blazers, but I mean, it's like you got to the Blazers must kick themselves when they see stuff like that because it's, you know, because I know that it's the branding is all, and branding is everything, and the idea that you know the Timbers who have. You know, not that they don't have fans, but I mean, they have a relatively speaking, you know, a small fan base compared to the Blazers. You know, and they're not, you know, they're new. They haven't been around that long, and I would say just in terms of iconography and in terms of the visual representations of themselves, the team, the fans, the brand. I mean, that's a huge, huge PR win for them.
Although I would point out, I mean, I think the Blazers are doing fine, and partly because what they have done has nothing to do with marketing and everything to do with they have completely changed the organization and completely changed the kind of players that they bring to Portland and just gotten rid of the whole Jailblazers thing. And it is, you go to a Blazers game now and it's invariably packed and it's families and it's, you know, and they just have guys on that team that you really want to root for.
Right, that you don't feel morally conflicted
right.
About wondering exactly what your ticket dollar is going to be spent on later that night.
Right.
Yeah. All right. I'm sorry, Don. We were doing a thing.
Were we?
Yes.
I thought we were just chatting away while we were waiting for David Walker to call.
No, we were going to do a watch of some kind.
No, that's not.
Okay. A corpse, I think, maybe.
Yes.
Well done.
I was hoping.
Here is your corpse watch for Wednesday.
I'm digging up bones. I'm digging up bones. Zooming things that's better left alone. I'm resurrecting memories of love that's dead and gone. Yet tonight I'm sitting alone.
And people are just sending me horror stories about guys they knew who had long hair who worked with lathes. All right, I'm just going to move on from those. Here is Don Taylor with your Corpse Watch.
Staff members at a New Mexico hospital made a gruesome discovery Tuesday when a man pulled up and said he had a woman in his car who needed help. Underneath the blanket in the man's Mercury Grand Marquis was a woman's body. Police have tentatively identified the woman was a 30-year-old friend. I can't read the story. I just realized half of the sentences are cut off. So I'm going to read a different
corpse
watch.
So I should just make the rest of it up in my head.
I have two corpse watches, so
okay.
I'll read the ickier one.
That's great.
A man who admitted to murdering a Yelm, Washington woman who was walking on a trail last August. Yelm.
Yeah. It's a horrible place.
Was sentenced to more than 26 years in prison on Thursday. Bernard Howell III, that doesn't sound like somebody who'd be killing people.
It really doesn't.
Bernard Howell III attacked Vanda Boone on a Tenino trail and asked a stranger to help him dispose of the body. Investigators said the 60-year-old's body was still warm when police found her.
Wait a minute. No, no, no. Asked a stranger to help him dispose of the body.
Yes.
Excuse me, buddy. I need your help for a sec. I just need your muscle.
I don't even like to ask people for directions. Is there any clarification as to who the stranger was or if it's just sort of a, come here. What are you doing right now? You got 5 minutes?
I think he just found a guy.
No, you don't just find a guy to
bring
just
your
do
shovel.
Not even just calling random people in the Yelm yellow pages. Not even in Yelm do you find people like that.
That's also not something a guy would do. He wouldn't ask for help.
No, see that's the thing. He would just drive the body around endlessly, looking for a lime pit somewhere.
Well, unfortunately,
maybe we should ask. No, no, no! It's around here. I'll find it.
It doesn't elaborate.
I don't even see a quarry.
Bernard Howell III?
It doesn't elaborate about the guy that Bernard held the third found.
Was he just upset that his parents, Thurston and Lovey, disappeared many years ago?
I think perhaps, yes.
I think a lifetime of schoolyard taunting has had a deleterious effect on him.
Well, he kept changing his story. First, he said he found the body and was trying to save the woman's family from having to pay for a funeral.
By sticking it in the woods.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then, it's like he still wouldn't admit to murder. But then, during an interview, he said that he found the woman already dead and then had sex with her corpse. And decided to drive her car to his house to bring back a sleeping bag, zip ties, and a 10-pound weight.
So he could dump her
in a swamp.
I don't want to stereotype, but what are the odds that he has a snake collection at home? Pretty good, right?
This is such a disturbing... Let's just... And in a moment here, we'll be joined by Mr. David Walker, who is standing by here. Let's just all take a breath here. Hold on. This is a good time to use our elevator music. Hold on. We're going to use a little, just a moment of happiness music. So let's everybody just... The Rick Emerson Show will resume in just one moment. Excuse us, won't you? All right. So does it clarify how the body was discovered or like where – I mean, how did his plan go awry?
Well, police – I'm not sure how his plan went awry. Police found her body stuffed in a sleeping bag inside his pickup truck.
Oh, I see. So it was like the thing of like they pulled him over for a taillight
and
or whatever.
And he was like,
hey, what's this?
I just found her like this. And I was going to bury her myself, you know, to save the family the trouble. Then he said, okay, I found her like this, and I had sex with her and went back, and I got a sleeping bag and some zip ties. Then eventually he said, okay, you're right, I killed her.
And do we know if the stranger part was then made up as well? Or is it just...
I don't know.
All right.
Because they don't mention the stranger again in the story at all.
Okay.
But his attorney told him that he could mount a viable insanity defense.
Yes.
But Hal decided he just wanted to plead guilty. And he apologized to the court and then asked for protection. Because he said, quote, I know there's a lot of guys out there that want to get me for this. I'm marked as a green light, which means a hit. Guys call me Dead Man Walking.
Yes, I think someone's cheese has been removed from his cracker, just mentally speaking. So, okay.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. There's your corpse watch. It's about halfway through the program. I'd like to insert sort of a moment. So there you go. All right, we'll just end that.
I'm digging up home.
God Almighty! Just a whole world of broken toys out there, just walking around. We're here with Anna Griffin from The Oregonian. You can read her in print in The Oregonian or online at OregonLive.com. We will rejoin the conversation here in a moment. We want to welcome now to The Rick Emerson Show our good friend, let's see, I've pressed the wrong button here. Hold on. Where's the on turning? Our good friend David Walker joining us now on the radio program. Hello, sir. How are you today?
All right. How are you?
I am fantabulous. Before we do anything else, let's get the date and time out there. So it's tonight. It is at Bridge City Comics that you and Mike Russell are going to be signing your respective work. And give us some more details on that. When and where?
Well, Mississippi, Bridge City Comics, which is over on Mississippi. And, of course, you know, like a fool, I don't have the address in front of me. I'm actually looking it up as we're talking. But that is tonight from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. here in Portland for the local listeners. And, excuse me, Mike is going to be signing copies. I believe he's got two books. He's got Court and Fat Boy and Mystery of the Buried Unicorn Burial Ground or something like that, which is a very, very funny book. And then he's got his collection of his the vampire thing. Don't help me out
vampire.
Here. What's it called?
There really are no books, are there? This is just an elaborate ruse. There really are no books of any kind. This is where we're going to show up, and you're just going to be there to harvest our organs or something.
Really, David doesn't need to have to care about Mike Russell's stuff. This is all about the Darius Logan stuff.
Well, no, I do care. I do care about it. But, so, you know, I want to make sure that I gave Mike a plug. And then, of course, we're going to have my book, which is not a comic. It is an actual book. not that comics aren't books, but it is a novel. It's a young adult novel. The title is Darius Logan, Super Justice Force. And it came out about 2 or 3 weeks ago, although there hasn't been an official release party, so this is it. This is the official release party.
I got to tell you that I've actually been reading it online because you were serializing it online at DariusLogan.com, and it's so I'm I don't know I think I'm on the fifth the fifth chapter because it was sort of in 5-chapter increments. So I am on chapter 5 right now, and I really have to say just no fooling. I am not as Paul Thomas Anderson would say. I am not just waxing your car here. It is quite good, and not that we did not expect it to be. You're a great writer, but it really is fantastic. So Darius Logan and Super Justice Force, DariusLogan.com is the website, and are you going to continue to serialize it online, or now that there are physical copies of it and it's also as an ebook, are you going to discontinue that?
The first 25 chapters is all people get for free.
Okay.
I figure my attitude is if you get through all 25 chapters, it means you've enjoyed it enough that you can now kick me a couple dollars. And if you hated the first 25 chapters, then you were a fool for reading all of them, and why would you give me money to buy a copy?
So it's, you know, you'll either get their money or at least you'll have their time, their sweet, precious time.
Yeah. I had someone stop me, actually. I ran into someone about a week ago. And he asked me, he's like, okay, well, how much of what you serialized, you know, is that like 3/4 of the book? And I was like, no, that's probably the first third of the book. So there's a total of 59 chapters. There's 25 serialized, but it represents about a third of the book that I've given away for free. And so he was one of those, you know, because he was sort of of the mind, like, I've probably given away most of it for free. Why bother paying for it? And I was like, no, it's... You know, it's essentially the first act of the book is what you can get for free.
And it really
is. You know,
It really is great, and like a lot of so-called, I mean, the term young adult, you know, especially as regards like you know, novels as fiction, it's just, I don't want to say that it's a meaningless term, but the distinction between young adult novels and adult, because I just finished this book a few weeks ago called The Book Thief, which is presumably, I found out after the fact, a young adult novel, but I never would have suspected or known that when I was reading it, and you know, and I think sometimes people hear young adult and they think it's a kid's book, and it's a subtle but important distinction that it is, I would say, for all ages, beginning at young adult. It's more than being a young adult novel. It is, you know, a novel for everyone who is at minimum a young adult.
Yeah. No, I've had a couple of people ask me, you know, oh, my kid's 10 or 11 years old. Would it be appropriate for them? And, you know, of course, it's a you know, kid by kid scenario. But like, if your kids haven't read, say, The Hunger Games yet, or if your kids have read The Hunger Games yet, it's probably on par with that in terms of the tone and the violence, not content-wise at all. So I definitely did not write a book for 9-year-olds. You know, this isn't Mr. Puppy and the Feel-Good Kitties or anything like that.
Bouncy Bunny in the Friendly Forest. Your next book should totally be called that. Your next Mr. Fuzzles Gets a Bath. That should, you know, and then, but then on the inside, it should just be full of just nothing but horrible things happening to people.
Well, I just came up with that title off the top of my head, so maybe I will. You know what? That could be Mike Russell and I. We could collaborate on
there you
it,
go. So. Hey, real quickly, just to sidetrack into a couple of things. And again, that signing is happening tonight. It's at Bridge City Comics in Mississippi, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Darius Logan, Super Justice Force, and Mike Russell will have I don't know, some slapdash thing he's put together. It's all about David Walker. So you just, Darius Logan, Super Justice Force, that is tonight, Bridge City Comics, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. And you can find out more about Mike Russell's stuff at culturepulp.com. It is at culturepulp.com. Is it true that you were at the, earlier today, you were at the chiropractor? Because you don't seem like a chiropractor kind of guy.
I did. I went to the chiropractor. I don't go very often, but I was having some problems, and I wanted to try to get a little adjustment going. I'm not as young and spry as I used to be, so I have to. I don't bounce back the way that I used to.
Is this? Are these problems related to your heroic takedown of a would be criminal ne'er do well recently?
Perhaps. I don't know. I'd like to think it's more just related to sitting at the computer for hours on end doing either schoolwork or writing. But yes, last week I did have an encounter with a I wouldn't call him a criminal ne'er-do-well. I would just say he was a deeply disturbed, psychotic man who chose to attack someone at a post office.
Now, here's – and you may be sick of talking about this, but if I were you, I would never – I'd just carry around cards saying, ask me about my heroic endeavors. But I found out about this because your mom had posted something on Facebook, and it was – you know, it was – there's no other way to put it. It was adorable. It was, my son is such a hero. And, you know, click here to find out more. And I went, and your mom had posted this whole thing about how, so if you can't, just sort of, if you could give us the sort of the recap, the briefly explain what happened to you. Because this is in Northwest. Give us the sort of the A to Z of how everything happened.
Well, basically last week I was, I just gone out for lunch with my mom. I had to mail some packages off, so I was like, hey, let's just swing by. There's a post office down the street. While I was standing in line at the post office, there was a very disturbed individual attacked one of the postal workers and managed to make his way into the back area of the post office. And I, like everybody else, you know, fled the area. In fact, I was the one who said, hey, maybe we should all go outside now and wait. Wait for the gunfire to erupt is basically what I was thinking. But by the time we got outside, there was no gunfire. I was on the phone with 911, and some woman who had not come out, who had chosen to stay inside for whatever reason, she suddenly came running out, and she was screaming something about, he needs help, somebody help him. And I assumed she meant one of the postal workers, so I... went back into the post office and went to the back room and found a postal worker and the crazy man struggling on the floor. And I jumped in and helped subdue the crazy guy.
That's
the short version.
You gave him what for? You gave him a bunch of fives, a little chin music.
Yeah. I it was when I first got in there, it was, you know, the first thing I did was make sure I didn't see like any guns or knives in his hands. Again, I just basically got on the floor because they were already on the floor, and I had to pin the postal worker to the ground because he was partially on top of the crazy guy. The crazy guy was a lot bigger than him, so I sort of had to. We basically double teamed this guy.
See, you're on about this all wrong. I mean, there's three people in this scenario. There's you, there's postal guy, there's crazy guy. Postal guy obviously owes you, you know, a debt for coming in and helping him out. And, you know, who knows? The tables might have been turned. He owes you at least some sort of debt. Crazy guy, no one's going to believe. That leaves David Walker to paint the whole scenario for everybody. And if I were you, I would be describing this in terms that were much more heroic and flattering to myself. I'm just saying that's me. Because, I mean, you know, history is written by the winners. And in this scenario, that is David Walker.
You know, I guess the problem is then you've got to live up to it. You've got to live up to that sort of that heroism that you paint yourself, that portrait that you painted yourself. So I want to be very careful to so that people won't expect anything like this from me ever again.
Awesome.
The next time I'm at the post office, I don't want anybody looking to me going. And what was funny was afterwards, you know, the police came and they took my statement. And by the time, you know, I went back out, there was people, and some people had actually come back after I'd come into the back room area. After I'd gone through, some guys followed me in. And a couple of them walked up to me afterwards, and they were like, there's no way I was going to be the first person through that door. And there's no way I would have like actually gotten involved in the altercation. And it just made, like, even now as I'm trying to explain to you, it makes perfect sense. And I'm sure like maybe two or three years from now it'll hit me like a ton of bricks. Oh, that was why it was a really stupid thing to do. But I just kept thinking about like if the situation were reversed, if I was in a situation where I was fighting in a fight with someone, I would want somebody to come break it up. You know, my days of wanting to pummel somebody single-handedly are long gone. Now I want somebody to come intervene, and I don't want to get hurt in the process, you know, especially if the cops show up.
I feel like this is the moment where the Aaron Copland music should be swelling up underneath. You need to say, and really, you know, I'm just a man, and then they'll have like a little where is he now thing underneath, and and it'll show you like working with children and kittens and so forth. So you are a braver man than I, and a good person at heart, David Walker. So by the way, the author of Darius Logan's Super Justice Force, which you will be signing tonight at Bridge City Comics on Mississippi from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. You can find out more at DariusLogan.com, and Mike Russell is going to be there signing a couple of his books, one of which features Court and Fatboy. You can find out more about that at culturepulp.com. So, congratulations on the book and the signing. And again, people can find out more about that at Darius Logan. Thank you for being you and for carving out some time to talk to us today, man.
Thank you very much. I will talk to you soon.
All right, there you go. That's David Walker vanishing into the mists of the afternoon. It was so great, though. And it's like, and I don't think he had actually posted anything about it on his own site or anything. It really was just because, like, everybody started commenting and, like, doing the thumbs up, the like thing on his mom's post, where it was just, I'm so proud of my boy David. And it was just, and it was like the cutest thing ever to read.
I like that. David's mom is awesome, by the way. She really is. And it's always so great. He'll post something on Facebook and she'll pop up in the remarks and say something like, you're just awesome. And oh, son, you're just great. Love you.
I like the coy way you got into that. So I hear you went to the chiropractor today.
Yes. because we were trying to get him on at the beginning of the show, Don said, he's going to have to be on 3 because he's the chiropractor. And it's like – and I don't know if you actually know – if you know David Walker, but he's a man who loves – I'll tell you, he loves his hate. He loves –
Here's David Walker, the many faces of David Walker.
Like many of us, as Henry Rollins once said, he doesn't just sort of hate willy-nilly. He hates with style and finesse and panache. And he just doesn't seem like a chiropractic is a touchy-feely thing. I mean, I went to chiropractic for a
long
time.
I was just sort of thinking this was an interviewing technique that I hadn't learned in J school. Like, so you had a plumber over recently?
Yes. That's the James
Lipton.
You've
been waxed? I hear you went and got waxed this week.
Tell me about what happened in Secaucus in 1972. I was actually just curious about the idea of him going to what I would have anticipated he would dismiss as hippie trippy nonsense. But in my head, actually, just moments before that, I thought, I wonder if this is because he did this whole thing of like subduing this crazy guy. So
it was very subtle the way I got into it.
How hilarious would it be if David Walker just came in one day and said, I just came from my aromatherapist.
Yeah, I mean, really, it is one of those things that you would not anticipate from a frame of it. If you have not read his book, Darius Logan, you can find it at DariusLogan.com. And yeah, the first 25 chapters are up. And if you really, honestly, the guy's given you 25 chapters of something that he's selling. You really owe it to yourself and to the artists everywhere to read if you get a chance. It is quite good. Hey, on that note, let's do something we don't do very often. Let us quickly go around the room and discuss what everybody might be reading at this point in their lives. I don't have my book club music with me, but I'll dig it up. Dawn Taylor, what are you reading at this point?
I'm actually between books. I just returned a big stack of things to the library, and I am next going to go pick up my book club book for next month, which is Room by Emma Donoghue, which, obvious.
There's a cringe over here from.
Yeah, obviously she's familiar with it.
Please do explain.
It's a book. It's a really unusual choice for my Mormon book club. It's a story about a young boy's told through the eyes of a 5 or 6 year old boy who lives in like a garden shed with his mother, who's been basically his entire life. They have been held captive by the man who fathered him.
Okay, then.
So yeah, so it is supposed to be just brilliant, but it also sounds
like a real pick me up.
I appreciated
grim.
It more than I enjoyed it.
That was like my thing with The Road. I reached this point early on where I said I am officially no longer enjoying this book in the traditional sense.
It is
of the
not
word.
As flat out depressing as The Road.
Really few things are as flat
right,
out. But it's,
exactly.
But you're that it's like saying that you know, I love that Schindler's List. It's difficult to say you liked it as such. It is that you appreciate the way it is done. It's well put together.
So yeah.
And it's called Room, The Room?
Room.
Room.
Room: A Novel.
All right then.
Push.
And so that is, so you are, what is the, what did you just finish up? You just finished reading
What did I finish? I finished a book called, well, I put, last month's book was A Friend of the Family. I just finished that book, The Lexicographer's Dilemma, which is about the development of Common English. I'm trying to remember what else I had. I read Carol Burnett's like latest memoir.
How was that?
It was good. It
yeah,
was good.
I heard.
It's mostly just anecdotes from her showbiz career, but it was a nice, breezy, fun read.
Because she's kind of doing the Larry King Shatner thing now, where it's like, you know, 17 autobiographies in, and at a certain point he's just, you know, Shatner is like, you know, just amusing things that happened at craft services.
Yeah, you know? It's kind of like that. Yeah. But, you know, it's fun to read these little the best story in that actually was about Tim Conway. They were they did a show where they went out of town and were doing some show like in Vegas or wherever. And this, of course, was licensed for all of the crew members and some members of the cast to just fool around on their spouses and run around and just be, you know, do all these horrible, irresponsible things they wouldn't normally do. And everyone was kind of looking the other way at these dalliances that were taking place. And Carol Burnett and her husband went to go pick up Tim Conway to go to dinner. And they knocked on his hotel room door and he said, "Come in." And they walked in and he was laying naked from the waist up in bed with a full-sized, rather realistic-looking stuffed sheep that he had bought at the hotel gift shop, and he was smoking a cigarette.
Fantastic.
And he said, "Oh, sorry, guys, I'll be with you in a minute." And he said, "This is Barbara." And then he kissed the sheep and said, "I'll be home later, honey." And then he got out of bed and put his clothes on and apparently gave them a wink and said, "This doesn't leave this room."
All right, then.
So there you go. That was my favorite story.
Anna Griffin from the
Oregonian. Do you think your mom will have that much fun in Vegas?
Probably not.
Okay.
What are you reading?
I am reading a Swedish or Dutch or something book called The Long Ships, which is a book. It's a novel about Vikings. And I picked it up at the library because Michael Chabon wrote the introduction.
That is the how many times have you done that where you're just like, you're looking at the library, at the bookstore or whatever, and it's like the introduction by the guy who wrote, you know, some book that you love.
But I'm enjoying it. It's very good. And I'm also reading a book called Triumph of the City by an economist from Harvard about how cities rock.
That
and
is
why.
So the I forget his name, but the guy who wrote Triumph of the City was actually on the Freakonomics podcast a while back talking about how cities came to be and how they are, in fact, you don't think of cities as an invention, but they are sort of mankind's greatest creation and a lot more environmentally friendly in some ways than they might be anticipated or they might be thought to be. So, excellent. What's it called? The Triumph of the City?
Triumph of the City.
That's like the definition of a book that I want to read at some point.
It's really good. And it's not as dry as you might think.
Here's the thing. We're in a sort of golden age right now of interesting books about things that seem like they would be uninteresting. Don and I have this sort of shared love of Bill Bryson. And I'm reading this book called The Mother Tongue, which is
which is great.
Yeah, which is fantastic. And it's like, you know, when you think about, well, the development of language and, you know, you feel like that has a very limited scope in terms of people that are going to find it. I mean, it basically is just like word nerds and grammar Nazis and whatever. But the thing about that book or a book like Triumph of the City is that where it is – it takes something that you never really thought about the background of something or the underpinning historically of something, and you realize that everything you see around you, I mean, every person, place, object, thing, everything has a fascinating story.
And books like that change how you look at the world.
Exactly. I mean, I swear to God, I read an entire book one time that was about the history of the pencil.
Oh, yeah, that's a great book. I've interviewed that guy. He's fascinating.
Nerd.
Totally.
There's a great book I read a few years ago that was just all about the history of salt.
That's a good book, too.
Yeah, and it's awesome. It is amazing. It is an amazing, fascinating book that just you don't really understand that the history of salt is basically the history of civilization.
We are simultaneously the most awesome and the most ridiculous, pathetic group of people I have ever known. And I like it. All right. Fantastic. Wonderful. Well, we'll wrap this up here in just a few so we can make way for Greg and Sarah. I should say that today's installment of the Rick Emerson Show Book Club and all the other parts as well, brought to you by Squires Electric. Find out more about them by going to squireselectric.com. It's 503-252-1609 via the telephone or squireselectric.com online. They're licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors, and smart folk in their own right. They understand, speaking of how things work, they understand how electricity operates, how it should work, and what to do when it doesn't work exactly the way that you expect. defect and how to fix it without, you know, how to fix it without setting fire to their house or various parts of their anatomy. So you can contact them at SquiresElectric.com or 503-252-1609. You can join the likes of folks like listener Dan, who actually bought a piece of property on Belmont, turned it into a gym, and when it came time, he realized it had been a business of some other kind before, or, you know, a restaurant or something, and he was taking out everything and remodeling it from the inside out, but knew that the electricity had to be adjusted for his needs. Called Squires Electric because he heard about it here. They came out, did the job right, did the job efficiently, did the job economically, and all was good with the world.
Just the other day, Donna came to me and said that they had gotten another job that had been someone who had called them and gotten a quote, and they went out and did some work on the house, and they said they heard about them on the Rick Emerson Show.
Excellent. So that and that really, all kidding aside, that actually does mean a great deal to us because we take our clients and our business partners really seriously. And you know, if we talk about somebody and if we endorse them, it's because we think that it's a great business. You're going to get exactly what you expect and what you need and what you pay for. So contact Squires Electric at 503-252-1609. Please tell me you heard about it here. And you can find them at SquiresElectric.com as well. And I think we got, when I say you got interrupted, I interrupted you, as is always the case. Anna Griffin from the Oregonian, you've got a piece coming up about the Timbers or about...
I have a piece coming up in Friday's paper about the one person in town who is not happy about the Timbers and continues to complain and says the stadium is not going to be comfortable if they're successful.
And so this, where would the stadium be?
Well, the stadium, it's PG Park.
Oh, they wouldn't be building an additional thing.
No, this is, well, what they've done over the last year is they've turned PG Park from a multi-use stadium into a soccer-specific stadium.
Okay, all right.
So they've added seats and added bathrooms and changed the layout.
Because there was that whole business of the seats had to be laid out in a certain way or they had to
right.
be, yeah. And so that has actually been done.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's supposed to be beautiful on the inside. I haven't been over there, but and read this week in the Oregonian that this ties into our conversation today. There's apparently a collection of feral cats in the building that they discovered when they were going through and doing the construction. That
they've lived there for years,
and
yeah.
they take care of the mouse problem.
Really? Mm-hmm. So it's not unlike how there's no mosquito problem on that island anymore with the spider trees. So
yes,
all right,
exactly.
It's one. The circle of life continues. Excellent. Reader in print in the Oregonian, online at OregonLive.com. Anna Griffin, one of our very favorite people. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget today, coming up around 33 minutes from now, 4 p.m. Pacific time, Dawn Taylor will be hosting Ham-Fisted Radio at Cascadia. Hello, I'm a professional broadcaster, Cascadia.fm, along with Mr. Bobby Fatboy Roberts. Anything in particular for today's program?
Nothing specific today.
The usual conglomeration of nonsense.
Exactly.
Excellent. That is at Cascadia.fm. You can also get it later at hamfistedradio.com. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District here in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Dawn Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. As always, we thank you for listening. The Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from y'all. So thank you. Continue to spread the word. That never goes unappreciated. It is Wednesday, April 13th, 2011, and that is the frequency, Kenneth. Thank you for listening. Be safe. See you all tomorrow. Bye now.